My apologies for that mishap. While this is loading, I just wanted to say that my work in masculinity stems from when I was doing my doctoral training. I was always fearful of the research out there that tries to demonize this idea of traditional masculinity, where being a man is seen to be barbaric, and the erosion of that idea of being a man. And I don't think we should be going into that field. I think there are ways where we can embrace this traditional idea of masculinity and other versions of masculinity, however we're defining that. But I think there are ways, and that's what this is trying to do with this presentation here, how do we embrace what these guys feel, how they feel masculine, in whatever way they feel that way, but use it. Don't try to shun it, but use that to empower them. And we got to be careful with that, I think so. But this discussion is called Faith and Masculinity. It's a discussion on raising awareness and promoting cancer screening among Latinos. My colleague, Dr. Leone, and I, we wrote a paper on this, and there's no financial relationships to disclose, but the relationship I want to disclose is our work with the Men's Health Initiative, and I'll go into that in a little bit in a slide that Dr. Leone and I and a few other colleagues in here are part of. This is our publication on that. And the background was that we're trying to figure out new and innovative methods for message delivery that encourage wellness promotion and particularly cancer prevention. We need some new and novel ways to tell these guys, hey, you should probably get screened. The evidence suggests that faith-based initiatives are effective, and the literature in men's health is improving from work in here. All of us are interested in men's health. We have published in here. It's improving. It's not as strong as we want it to be, so this is part of that narrative, particularly among Latinos. What I'm going to do is hopefully present trends from a series of community-based seminars that the Men's Health Initiative did conduct in the Latino community. We're going to explore this role of masculinity, how Latinos define it, how they define it. I think it's important to understand the population that you're working with and how they define what it is to be a man in that community. It's kind of like ethnographic almost. We're trying to explore that definition and how to enhance cancer screening processes through that definition. We're going to discuss the use of pastors as the conduit for transforming that information to the parishioners themselves. And we're going to hopefully lay some foundations for future research. Is this your thing? Yeah. We're going to pass off to Jim. This is kind of his forte. Yes.
So good morning. I'm going to make use of my state-funded iPad, so be sure to tell me that. My name is Jim Leone. I'm actually a local guy. I'm at Bridgewater State University and Northeastern University. Mike is actually from Florida, where, as you know, there's a large contingent of Latino men. And up here in Boston, we do have quite a representation of Latino men as well. So it's kind of interesting to look at the distribution. So I'm going to share a couple of stories. I'm going to be brief with my comments. What you can see on this slide is we need to pay attention to this group. I'm not really a big thinker with this stuff. We need to pay attention to this group because there's obvious need. I think demography is useful. Excuse me for a second. Demography is useful, but one area that we have, particularly up here in Massachusetts, is the undocumented groups. The undocumented groups that fare worse even beyond that of course, the documented people in the state and other states. We also, how many of you are familiar with the Latino paradox, the health paradox? Okay. So, we see longer lives in some groups, and we also see better health outcomes in some groups. But if you actually disaggregate the data, you actually find extremely disparate conditions between and among different groupings, particularly with men. So, I think it's important to understand that demography can only take us so far in terms of understanding these conditions. So the story that I want to share with you has to do with some of the work that I've done over the past couple of years with the Harvard Family Van, which is an outreach service. We were interested in looking at where maybe we could expand the services from that service, which goes around in different communities. It provides screenings free of charge. And what we noticed is there was an absolutely distinct need based on emergency room data for East Boston. If you're not familiar with East Boston, there's no West Boston, but East Boston is a community that is very heavily Latino, and we were looking at some of the emergency department data, and the emergency departments were screaming out to us saying, we have so many people coming in, we don't know exactly where they're from, where they're living, we just have information, we have metrics on their health outcomes, and they were terrible. You know, men were coming in with BMIs of close to 50, cholesterol levels were skyrocketing, pre-diabetics were certainly in that area. So one of the ways that we actually reached out to the Latino men community is to understand where are they going, and particularly where are the undocumented men going. Excuse me. So, you know, just in my notes here, often we only reach those who want to be reached, as preaching to the choir here. There are so many sick people out there that the choices are being made for them. So, you know, they arrive at the emergency department, there's very little, even in a city like Boston, very little cultural outreach. You know, here's your physician, here's the person you're going to see. You know, we do have lots of services with respect to interpreters, but we don't have, even in this city, enough of that presence. So I think we need to keep the fingers on the pulses of Latino health and other marginalized populations. And to paraphrase one of our APAHA keynote speakers, we need to do more and do better. Do more and do better. So a couple of quick comments here. Society often views men's health outcomes or male health outcomes as normalized, as Dr. Rivito mentioned before. We were working with this term called normatively content. So oftentimes we hear of normative discontentment. So we kind of embrace this culture of accepting things, accepting poor outcomes, and we expect men to fare worse. So I would challenge you all to think about, with the gender studies that we just heard about, based on what? You know, why? Why does that exist in our society? What is it? Where does it come from? If there are culture and language barriers to start, it's no wonder why we often miss this group of men. We have trouble promoting medical conversations with men, period. So when you sub-stratify to people that there's lacking cultural awareness and cultural competence in the medical system as we know it, you're going to miss them even more so. So how do men like to prefer messages? We've heard from others, particularly yesterday, about body language, body positioning, and timing are all very important. Dr. Rivito's written a little bit about how men like to receive messages about particular health issues. I'll refer you to something called the boy code. Anybody ever hear of the boy code? Okay. Likely, this resides throughout the lifespan, so we see it develop in younger males where, you know, there's this emphasis on basically appearing competent. So, you know, I got that. I understand. I know what's going on there. Avoiding femininity. So, you know, this is a code that a lot of younger males ascribe to based on our sociocultural upbringing. Avoiding anything not heterosexual. And I think this very much pertains to Latino men because of the invasive nature of a lot of the testing that we see, particularly with prostate cancer, DREs, and whatnot. And even from a last session that I sat in, we hear a lot about sexual abuse, and there was very heavy emphasis on a previous session with younger women. I threw the question out there. You know, again, your data are wonderful, but what about the groupings of boys that either don't report or they're not given the opportunity or the voice to report? So I think that also has a lot to do with kind of hit twice. You know, you're a male, so you're not expected to talk about it. If it's of sexual nature, you definitely don't want to talk about it because then that robs you of potential masculinity. So the concept of machismo is interesting to understand why your screening rate's so low. I think Latino men have experienced a different normalization process as it relates to masculinity for probably all of their lives. You know, this is not something that develops. It's something that has been ingrained in them since day one. I know Mike wants to get back up here. So I think we have to do a better job in aligning with Healthy People 2010, 2020 initiatives. We certainly are working towards a more vibrant citizenry and healthier communities. The social determinants of health are not the same in all groups. The context in which they interact is a better focus, at least in my opinion, particularly as it relates to diverse cultures. So my conclusion, we need to find better ways to engage a population that already lacks engagement. The concept of taking health messages to them is more powerful than saying, come to us. I think that speaks volumes. So community health workers are used to this, but how do we engage this in the medical world? And I'll use the story of, I'm an academic, you know, so I do a lot of my work in the ivory tower, and working with other outreach groups like Mike and the Men's Health Initiative really brings it to the people. It actually gets more stuff into the streets, into the field workers. So working with social workers, for example, working with, again, community health workers, I think is important because that actually does something. And I think that's what we're all here to understand. So now Dr. Rovita is going to elaborate on some ways which he engaged the community in outreach. So thank you very much for your attention. I'll just sit up here.
Always clap worthy. So how do we do this? We address the importance of increasing informed decision-making, IDM skills, among at-risk males. Our population was Latinos. Through innovative venues, it was faith-based that the evidence showed that it is effective, of discussing with novel implementation through the pastors. It was interesting how instead of going, and this stemmed from cultural competency, because sometimes we go in the community and we're not quite familiar about how that community works or interacts or communicates with each other. And sometimes the reason why these interventions are so ineffective is because a lack of cultural competency. So I was like, maybe we could actually add a level of implementation and not go directly to the parishioners, but go to the pastors first. And I'll go into that in a second. I think everyone here may know about informed decision-making or shared decision-making skills, but that is one of those, everyone's doing it. It's like the hot thing to implement in an intervention is increase informed decision-making skills. But how, that's the issue, is how. It's seen with patient-provider relationships, and I was wondering if we're all public health here, how can we apply IDM, increasing that, thank you, to population itself. Now, I thought to the pastor-parishioner relationship. Let me go through here. The one question, I have limited time here, I just want to go through here. The question I had was informing or increasing informed decision-making for Latinos to go for cancer screening. This idea of masculinity does exist. We're not going to erode masculinity by any means. It's there. It's ingrained in our culture, however we define that. But the problem is we're trying to erode it. We should embrace it. And the question I have is, can it be trumped? And I thought through spirituality, through this literature on faith-based initiatives and how certain groups, although they seem to be the traditional, like, beat your chest man, there are ways to go around that and utilize that as a strength instead of a weakness. And I thought, can spirituality actually trump that? What MHI is, the Men's Health Initiative, we're a community outreach and research national contingent of scholars. Jim, Frank, Pete, there's a bunch of people in here that are part of MHI. We do our own research and we actually conduct interventions or we conduct our own research and then actually go out in the community and do outreach based upon our own evidence. I think it's pretty interesting how we all work together so well. But this one was, again, going into the Latino community, talking to the pastors first and seeing what the salient ideas and variables were, how their parishioners would perceive cancer screening recommendations. And it was very, very effective. What we wanted to give the parishioners tool to go get talk to their doctor and get screened, but again, using that pastor influence over them to actually transmit that message more effectively than me or than me going in there and telling them. What we did was, there's a few groups, and that's me. It was a structured discussion. It was a focus group protocol. They're all pastors down here. The room's a bit bigger than what that picture suggests, but we went in there. Three parishes were targeted, 70 pastors in total. There are a few parishioners in there, but a translator was available. That seemed to be kind of a barrier a little bit, but it wasn't too big of a deal. But there was three parishes and with 70 pastors. The trends in a discussion with the pastors was that Latino men, because of this ingrained machismo, masculine definition of the Latino community, Latino men were told to hide their pain, worries, and this is ubiquitous across white, black, Hispanic, whatever. This is like something unique about men. I think whatever culture you look at, these are kind of like this trend. It's not unique to Latinos. The role of the man in the household as the head of the household, family obligation, family comes first before them. There's a fear of procedures, lack of knowledge, and peer judgment. This goes to what me and Jim were publishing on, this normative contentment. But again, this is not so unique to Latinos. It's just, maybe it's enhanced, I don't know, but it's not unique to them. But so I expected kind of this trend. But one thing I do want to disclaim, that these are evangelical Latinos. So this is not applicable. We're trying to go in other faiths and other Latino subgroups, because this is primarily Dominican, Puerto Rican. If I went to Cubans or whatever, it'd probably be a little bit different with like little cultural nuances that you have to obviously research before you go in and do this. But this is primarily Puerto Rican Dominican. So again, this may not be generalizable to different faith subgroups or different ethnicity subgroups in Latino culture. There is a deep-rooted Latino cultural value system present. And I think we shouldn't demonize that. I'm not saying to celebrate certain things either. I'm not saying that, but we shouldn't demonize being a man, however they're defining that. That's problematic. It may lead to actually maladaptive habit formation. Man, in this culture, man was the head of the household and provides for family, which may lead to what my colleague before me was saying, a repression of emotions and expression of health concerns. Granted, all the literature says this. It relates down here that masculinity does influence repression of feelings and emotions, yes, leading to maladaptive behaviors. Recommendations that we give. So our discussion with the pastor went really well. At first, it was kind of awkward, but actually, they started embracing it more and more, and they became comfortable, not only with them communicating to their parishioners, but also with themselves. I found them asking questions about what they should do. Very, very interesting. It's very organically grown. We're trying to give pastors the ability to talk to their parishioners. We see that these men trust their pastors with sensitive information. They were not going to trust some outsider coming in, so why not go to the pastor first with these men's groups? We're going to try to give the pastors the power to transmit that information about IDM. They're trusted members of the community and members of the larger Latino family. Increased discussion, increased knowledge equals increased likelihood of cancer or screening adherence. They're already a captive audience. They're there going on a Sunday. They want to be. They're not being forced to be at the men's group there. So they're a captive audience, which is also very important. Limitations, of course, is that language barriers, but that was reading literacy, language literacy, and health literacy. There's three literacies, not just one. So we had to battle those. Access issues, although you say, oh, go get your PSA checked or whatever, maybe they don't have the insurance, particularly the undocumented. And again, this may not be generalizable to all Latino or faith subgroups. Last one, just some shameless self-promotion here. Jim and I, we're doing some future research on TSE interventions and prostate cancer informed decision-making interventions. Also, this normative contentment, we're trying to explore this, what's defining a man and how that's leading to maladaptive health outcomes. Dr. Leone's book, I just want to give him kudos. He wrote the first textbook on men's health for any kind of men's health courses out there at the university level. Jim wrote that book, and hopefully he's going to promote that shamelessly at his next session, which is a little bit later this afternoon. I think it's going to be a fantastic discussion on redefining men's health needs. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.